It's really important to cold email. Like, we talk about 8 to 10 touch points to convert a retailer. That's what I like to tell my team so that they don't get discouraged. It's like, okay, you've only reached out 5 times. You still got to keep going.
Hey, everyone. Thanks for tuning in. I'm Shuang Esther Shan, your host here at Shopify Masters, your companion for starting and scaling your business. My guest turned her rainy day frustration into a multi-million dollar company that keeps people dry and our planet cleaner. Meet Morgan Cross. She's the founder of Original Duckhead, an innovative umbrella company creating long-lasting designs made from recycled plastics. Morgan has mastered product design and customer conversion, hitting 100% year-over-year growth in 2024 and selling around 1,000 units a day, all without having to sacrifice on style or sustainability. Morgan, welcome to the show. Thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you for having me.
I am so honored to talk to you because I have loved the design for over 10 years now. Remember seeing the first Duckhead umbrella from a friend. The design is so unique. So talk to us, what inspires you to create this umbrella?
Yeah, so this umbrella actually was the original one, belonged to my mom. And growing up, I remember seeing this umbrella and absolutely loving it. And when it came time to start my entrepreneurial journey, I was thinking about what I could do next. And it sort of clicked that I could do umbrellas after moving to the UK. And it was raining so much here. Yeah. But I really wanted to stand out in the market. And so I remembered that duck umbrella, and I thought, oh yeah, that's it. Let's take that design, but modernize it and make it much more eco-friendly.
And I think this is such a unique story as well. You are not the typical direct-to-consumer brand journey. You actually started reaching out to retailers. Why did you make that decision?
So when I started Original Duckhead in 2012, my thought process was, because I was self-funded, I didn't have a lot of money for customer acquisition, and I knew that retailers already had a built-in audience. So I thought, let me tap into that first and then prove product market fit, and after that, scale into D2C. And, you know, at the time, there was sort of your low-grade umbrella that is disposable and that usually ends up in landfill. And on the other side of the spectrum, there was those really expensive umbrellas that hadn't really evolved and that didn't have a strong brand around them. So I really identified this white space to create a design-led, you know, affordably priced umbrella, but that really tapped into that eco-conscious movement that was really taking on and that consumers really craved.
Yeah. And you actually was working on this project as a side hustle when you were still in your corporate job. What was your approach to actually reach out to retailers as a one-woman show and being able to convince them to take a chance and place an order with you?
Yes. So I made it as easy for them as possible. So the barrier to entry was very low. So very low minimums, but still giving them great margins. And of course, it's product first. So we had a compelling, I had a compelling umbrella that really connected with the retailers emotionally. So they would see it at trade shows when we did our first trade shows, and it would make them smile. So they knew that it would make their customers smile. And then also I sort of solved a few problems that they might have. If it didn't sell, I would do sell a return for them. So made it really risk-free for them or even consignment. And also a lot of them didn't know how to display the product in store. So I made sure that very early on we had point of sale displays so that for them it was a one-stop solution. You have low minimums, you know how to display it in the store, and if it doesn't sell, we'll take it back.
Yeah, that's, I think, the perfect advice, because if you make it easy for the retailers, they're more likely to take a chance on you. And even before that idea of approaching retailers first, you actually had to approach manufacturers to help you bring this idea to life. What were you looking for when you were looking for production partners?
I was looking for a production partner that was, A, willing to take a chance on me, so willing to do small runs, maybe even do a sample for free, but also someone that would share my values. So I looked for a family-run business. Ideally, I wanted it to be woman-led, which our factory is. I'd love to say that the first factory we worked with was amazing, but it wasn't. And so we had to change a couple times before finding the right factory, which we now have. And we've been partnering with them for over 7 years now.
Wow. Yeah. And if you're talking to a new founder who's mm-hmm. entering into their first production run or just looking for possible partners, what are some tips you would give them today?
I would say do your homework. Try and go visit the factory. You learn a lot when you have boots on the ground and you actually see how the product is made, how people are treated, just the condition. Is it clean? You know, like, do they have respect for the material? So that would be number one. Look at their accreditations if that's important to you. And then lastly, I would say, can you scale with them? Do they have capacity to maybe do small runs now, but in the future to grow with you? And also, can they innovate?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, these are all really great things to keep in mind. Mm-hmm. And I also want to highlight that not just the materials you use are sustainable. I believe every umbrella equals like 9 plastic bottles, but every aspect of packaging, fulfillment, logistics, you actually think about it through a sustainability lens. So how do you carry that value through every aspect of the business?
So we have a set of values that we live by. So we hire by those values, we operate by those values, and they're very clear and the team is aware of them. And for us, sustainability comes first. We don't want to put something out in the world that wasn't made as best as we can make it, mm-hmm. But also that's not going to last. So the best part about being sustainable is making something that's going to stand the test of time. So we love it when we hear people say, oh, we've had your umbrellas for a decade, because that's what makes a product truly sustainable.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, because you're really working against this throwaway culture that kind of exists within the umbrella space as well.
Yes. Every year, there's 1 billion umbrellas that are discarded worldwide.
So crazy to think about. Yeah.
Staggering number. Yeah.
And then after a few years of operating, you have retailer partnerships and then you were ready to go online. What were you thinking about when prepping to launch in e-commerce?
Oh, that was a big decision for us. It was time for us to tell our story mm-hmm. and to be able to showcase our story through the words, through our website, but also through beautiful imagery. And we wanted to have a direct rapport with our end consumers. So up until then, we really looked at our consumers as being the retailers. We were working for the retailers and we were doing everything we could to make them a success. But I just had the desire to speak to she's mainly a woman who buys from us. And I wanted to know more about her shopping habits. And so Shopify really helped us get that analytics that we weren't getting before.
And what were you learning from the analytics that might have been a little surprising as you were scaling up e-commerce?
We learned that she likes to shop all year round, which is great.
Yeah.
Because people think that, oh, umbrellas, it must be such a seasonal business, but it actually isn't because it rains somewhere. At some point,
that's right,
year-round.
Maybe year-round in the UK.
In the UK, exactly. But we also work with Australia and, you know, like Southern Hemisphere. And we even find that in sunny countries, they still like a good umbrella. Mm-hmm. And that she will buy more than one. And a lot of times, if she likes a product, she will then buy one to gift. So that's something that we learned. We also discovered that our main markets in Europe are, for example, France and Germany. We're also very present in the US and, like I said, Australia.
Mm-hmm.
So that really helped us pinpoint exactly where most of our customers are.
Because I think as an outsider, they might have raised questions about seasonality. Mm-hmm. And they also raised this question about being a sustainable business. They feel like if your products last forever, then how do you get customers coming back? And to your point, by building this great product, people are happy to gift and share the word of Duckhead as well. Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely.
So once you're online, you also were able to scale this direct-to-consumer channel, making up 20% of the business now. I guess, talk to us about some of the things you did to really scale that new channel.
Yeah, so Shopify really helped us get to that 20%. We were able to use the back end to get more analytics. And what's great is that we use a theme. So we were able to do everything in-house. We're not coders. It was quite simple for us to figure it out. So we didn't have to spend too much money on getting our website to look beautiful. I think it looks beautiful and professional.
It does. It does.
And just to use all these apps that are available to be able to change the cart and make sure that we were cross-selling and getting people's emails. So we have grown our emails list so much. And that's a great way for us to market directly to the consumer as opposed to going through social. So it's been Shopify has been very instrumental in helping us grow our overall business. Because another thing is, it's also a tool that we use for wholesale to attract leads. So we have our wholesale page where our retailers can come to the website and learn more about us. This is also a way for us to recruit people because we have a career page. So we really see our website now as our home. You know, this is where the brand lives.
A great place to not only be a point for marketing, transactions, but also those retail and career relationships as well.
Absolutely.
So because you had great success with retailers and it made up majority of the business, when you went online, there was less pressure for you to perfect the store. How were you experimenting and building up this online presence?
We started slow. We learned from our mistakes. We quickly realized that we needed to have a better user experience and that we needed to be mobile first. So that was one of the big learning curves. We used to design our website from the standpoint of, you know, looking at it from a computer screen, but that's not how people shop anymore. And so that change made a big difference in our revenue and our conversion rate. But also, how do you make people stay longer on the website? How do you make sure that they actually finalize the transaction? Because we were getting a lot of people to the website, but then they were dropping off. So it was constantly, and we still do that, we're constantly refining our website to make sure that it's more usable.
And I think there's also a great additive of being online is you take in feedback. You also learn from customers' ideas and incorporate them into new product designs.
Yeah, absolutely. We have learned so much from our customers. One of the big changes that we've made besides introducing new products was, for example, customers were telling us we need to see the product in use. And all of our imagery online was still life. And so a couple of years ago, we did our first photo shoot with models. And so that was, you know, something that seemed so obvious that we just hadn't addressed because things were working without it.
Yeah.
What's been great about having more of a connection with the end consumer is how many emails we get of people that used to have a duck umbrella growing up, or that had, you know, their mother or grandmother had one and they always wanted one. And so there's a true connection to the product and a nostalgia that comes from it. We have a lot of people who give their products, their umbrellas, a name.
Oh, wow. Yeah.
So it's very sweet. We get a lot of lovely emails from our customers.
And the other really fascinating point I want to raise is you actually had this business running as a side hustle for such a long time until a handful of years into the business where you were comfortable to be a full-time entrepreneur. Mm-hmm. What were some milestones that made you feel comfortable with that decision? And why did you keep the business as a side hustle for such a long time?
So some of the key milestones were signing up some of our retail partners, some key accounts that are very influential in the gifting industry. I think that really gave me a sense that I was onto something. And then after that, a lot more retailers came to us. So once I saw the traction, I felt comfortable sort of letting go of what I was doing. And also because I was a one-woman show for so long, I just didn't have enough time. I just needed to dedicate more time to the business for it to grow and for it to fulfill its potential.
Yeah, I think it's worthy to note that you have some iconic museums like MoMA, Kew Gardens here in the UK, so many iconic landmarks that are known for its gift shops partnering with you. What's your advice for solidifying those relationships and growing it over the years as well?
I would say it's really important to cold email, to not be afraid to just call, email. Like we talk about 8 to 10 touch points to get to convert a retailer. That's what I like to tell my team so that they don't get discouraged. It's like, okay, you've only reached out 5 times. You still got to, you still got to keep going. Mm-hmm. And so we have, top of funnel, we do our trade shows, we do our cold emailing, and then we send samples if we need to. And then we have brochures. So we really try and nurture the relationship. But once they become a customer, then, it doesn't just end there. We don't just fulfill the order and then they don't hear from us. We make sure that their sell through is the way they want it. We switch product if they didn't pick the right SKU, perhaps. Mm-hmm. We support them with in-store displays with beautiful imagery for their online stores. So their success is our success and they know that. And we make sure that, if they post on Instagram, we'll feature them. So we don't see them as competitors. I know certain brands will look at retailers mm-hmm. as competitors to their online store, but we see it all as it's just one. We're all working together. So we feature them on our website as well in our directory.
Yeah, because all of it is also additional marketing. And then when you decided to take that plunge, I feel like, your full-time corporate career was also kind of enabling you with the skills as well because you were working in fashion. And I guess what were some of the things you took from your corporate career that really helped with building up this brand as well?
I think attention to detail, a great respect for customers because I worked in retail a lot on the sales floor, but also managing a team. That was a very, very good experience. Just that, you need a team to build something big, and the way you treat people really permeates the whole brand. And so I think that's the biggest take I took from the corporate world.
Yeah. That transition into full-time entrepreneurship happened around COVID, and you're also building up your own team. So what were you thinking about as you were hiring staff and kind of creating a culture of your own now?
It was about bringing on the right talent, but sometimes the role that you want to fulfill is not necessarily the person you're going to come across. And what I mean by that is you come across someone that has a great talent and maybe you weren't thinking of that role, but there would be a great addition to the team. And so when I started hiring a team, I hired a lot of people at once. And they're still with me today and their roles have changed. So it was all about hiring for attitude and willingness more so than skill set per se. I needed people who could see the vision and who were full of enthusiasm and energy and wanted to grow. They were looking for their next, the next place where they were going to stay for a while.
Yeah. Because I think like scaling up a business, things change so much over the years. And the skill set would have to evolve with that as well. One thing that has stayed true is that you actually remain self-funded and you build your own runway, not sustainable just in the design, but also the business model mm-hmm. as well. What's your advice for building a great financial foundation and one that, you're able to achieve 100% year-over-year growth, but this is something you build on your own?
My advice would be to make sure that you have product market fit as soon as possible, that you find your customers, whether it's wholesale or D2C, and that you focus on making the sale and not get caught up in the noise. I think in the beginning, you have to make that sale. You have to make that phone call in order to see if people really want what you're selling. And if they're not, pivot as quickly as possible.
Mm-hmm. And I think we teased a little bit in the beginning of developing those retail relationships, but a step back or a step before that mm-hmm. is you picked out some trade shows that you invested in, and mm-hmm. that was a great kind of opening of doors for you to start reaching out to retailers. So for new founders who are thinking about investing in a trade show, what should they look for and what should they think about when attending one?
I would say look at what your competition is doing, what trade shows they're attending, and if you have the funds and if you the time, go to the trade shows, see the lay of the land, where you would like to be positioned, and start small. Like one of the trade shows we did back in 2019, Shop Object, one of our first trade shows, we only had a small table. We didn't even have a booth, mm-hmm. but we met one of our biggest customers. So just being there makes a huge difference.
Yeah. And I like your advice of going there as an attendee first.
Yes.
Kind of sussing out the situation before you actually invest in a booth and things like that. And then I think what's fun for me, I love going on the website and looking at new collections and designers that you're working with. So there's a great balance, right? You have prints that have stayed with you throughout the years. There's also limited drops. So talk to us about working with different designers and managing the different prints you have.
So we have some evergreen prints that we keep throughout, some colors that are still our top sellers. So, you know, your yellow duck, your black duck umbrella, those are always the top selling products on our website. But we regularly work with independent brands or designers just to inject that newness and that excitement for the brand. And it's just great fun just to see our brand interpreted with their codes and just coming together to create something new.
Yeah, and I'm sure like that also brings hopefully a new audience into the brand that have followed the artists who are interested to see their work on an umbrella.
Absolutely. It's a great way to share audiences, to share market. We just did a collaboration with a brand called Nanga, which is an outdoor brand from Japan. And they came up with such a great concept. You know, the little duck umbrella is in a sleeping bag.
Yeah, I saw that. It looks very cozy.
It's very cozy. But it was good for us because it was a new audience. Like we was more of a masculine audience, maybe an audience that was slightly younger than what we're used to. So that it was a very good experience for us.
And of course, like for the brand, you also think very consciously about expanding into new product categories. There's our the reusable bags. You also launched a new design for the umbrella, one without the duck head. Yes. So yeah, talk to us about the concepts and the ideas you have before considering expanding into new product lines.
So our goal is to become the market leader in design-led umbrellas. And for a long time, we were very, very focused on our one product, which I think was good because it made us very disciplined about making sure that we were actively selling because we had this one product. And to grow a brand, there's a few avenues you can explore. You can add more SKUs. You can raise the price, right, if you want to grow your margin, or you can acquire new customers. And so for us, it was very much intentional to make sure that we were maxing out what we could do with this one product before we allowed ourselves to go to new products. That being said, we also really listened to our customers. And this came from one of our customers who was who wanted us to design an umbrella for them without a duck handle, but still incorporating all of our sustainability credentials. So that's how the Daily, our new umbrella, came to be. And we are accelerating the rate at which we're going to launch new umbrellas. Again, our customers have been asking us for a long time to make a mini umbrella. So that's going to be coming out this year. And also a children's umbrella with a mini duck handle.
Okay, so yeah. Exciting, very cute. And I do love the fact that, customers are giving feedback and they truly love the core of sustainability. And I think some founders might struggle with that, thinking about sustainability and maybe the cost or the additional complexity associated. I guess, what's your advice there when someone's building something new? How can they actually keep the idea of sustainability and thread that through every decision they make?
I would say if you're building something new, bring it from the start and bake it into your price structure because it is more expensive. But if it's always been there and if you account for it, then it'll make it that much more easier than trying to backtrack, I think. Mm-hmm. For us, it's a non-negotiable. All of our fabrics are recycled plastic bottles. Our wood is FSC certified. We now are a member of 1% for the Planet, so we donate 1% of our revenue to charity. And we are on track to become a B Corp. Hopefully, we'll be certified this year. And all those things, including the packaging, are just things that are really core to who we are.
Mm-hmm. And while you're growing for all of your channels, the retailer relationships, as well as online now, how are you balancing these different channels as you're growing, expanding, and keeping the values close to heart as well?
So once we launched our website with Shopify, our D2C part of the business grew from 10% to 20%. So it became a lot more intense. So we've had to hire more people, but also move to fulfillment centers. So we were doing all of our fulfillment ourselves from the UK. And then, Brexit and all those things came, making it a bit more difficult for us to ship to Europe. So we decided to partner up with distribution centers. So we have one in the UK, one in Europe, and one in the US. But we also work with a lot of distributors around the world.
Yeah. So it sounds like having all those partnerships makes it really easy to kind of manage all of those different fulfillment areas and also pass on the value to customers because you're not fulfilling from one location, but a location closer to them.
Exactly. So it's more professional. That's what they do, 3PLs. They have an army of people so they can react to demand, and the shipping costs go down because we're local now as opposed to shipping internationally. And also for our carbon footprint, it just made much more sense.
Yeah. And one thing about growing so much year over year is that, the job that you had a year ago is very different from what you're doing today. Mm-hmm. How do you set up a business model that can grow and pivot and be flexible while still remaining very true to the values that you've set as well?
I think it's important to be clear on your targets. So we're a target-focused company. We know exactly mm-hmm. what revenue we want to achieve by the end of the year. We know the profitability we want to maintain, and we work towards that every single day. And if you know where you want to go, it's much easier to get there. So I think for me as a CEO, what's changed, first of all, things change all the time. There's, new challenges that arise. And I try to see in the future, okay, how can I future-proof the business? But for example, I think a lot of what I used to do was based on intuition, and now it's more data-driven. Growing the team is now a forefront of my mind. I think I spend probably 10 to 20% thinking of new hires of my time, thinking, who is going to be the next person to get us to the next stage of the business.
And I guess maybe how do you adjust yourself then? Because you not only kind of have to unlock new challenges you haven't dealt with before, mm-hmm. but how do you emotionally prepare yourself for just like taking on new tasks and having your role change as you're kind of scaling the business?
What I try to do is look at so I know what the next break point for our business is, and I try to see what businesses of that size are doing mm-hmm. and prepare ourselves to the challenges that are going to come. So for example, right now we're in a phase where we need to hire more people, but I know that soon, so we need to put in more processes in place. Mm-hmm. So that's something that this year is going to be a big focus. So I sort of look at it challenges per year. So last year we were very focused on logistics. That was one thing. This year is going to be more about making sure that our supply chain is robust and that we have the right people in the right seat in order to get to our next break point.
Mm-hmm. And I think for anyone who might have not thought about umbrellas too much, they might think, oh, that's like already an established industry mm-hmm. with so many big players. How can I even imagine myself into that industry? So I guess like to your younger self, would you say for like entering something that might be intimidating with established competitors, but you feel like you could bring something new to that?
I would say find your point of differentiation and go for it. Like it's important to study competition, but you don't want to be bogged down by that. You don't want to be too focused on what other people are doing. You want to do you. You want to do you the way you can do it and be unique and be very clear to as to what your uniqueness is. Mm-hmm. I think that's really important. And, you know, it's all well and good to have a great product, but if no one knows about it, then you're not going to go anywhere. So it goes back to being relentless with selling, calling, you know, if you're doing the B2B route, making sure you put in those calls and in those emails and that you shout your product at the top of the roof. Like people need to know you because best known beats best product.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, love that. Because I think unique product and also advocating for your brand definitely will lead to great success. Yeah. So yeah, look forward to all the new products and all the new ways that Original Duckhead will grow.
Thank you. This was great.
Shopify Masters is produced by Gogo Zoger and Megan Coyle, engineered by Miku Betlam and Matt Schwartz, and I'm your host, Shuang Esther Shan. The best way to support the show is to write us a review and share this episode with a friend. We are here every Tuesday and Thursday and on YouTube for video episodes. And don't worry, new episodes are coming back to YouTube very soon. Until next time, thank you so much.